the summer, and also representing us with our partnering organization, the Volunteer Warriors of the Arts. They're a subcommittee of the Bar Association in Cleveland, and as their name implies, they provide services for people in the arts. You'll hear in a minute from George Carr, he's the presenter tonight, he's also a member of Volunteer Warriors of the Arts. Quick few notables in the crowd, Chris Lawson, also with Volunteer Warriors of the Arts, big fan. Tom Sinna, Volunteer Warriors of the Arts. Are there any of the LA people here that I'm missing? Paul Turner.
Mike's not here?
No, not yet.
Alright.
Anyway, these are them, and say hi to them, they're here to meet you and network with you.
The LA member?
Yes, yeah, there he is. At any rate, just a couple of housekeeping things for Cozy first. We are sort of in talks with Spaces Gallery to collaborate and partner on some entrepreneurial training workshops for later this year in September. So keep an eye out for those. We'll disseminate that message and get that information out. But it'll be sort of generalized arts, business, and arts entrepreneurial training for multi-disciplines, but pretty heavily focused on visual arts as would make sense for Spaces Gallery. So that keep an eye out for that on our website, cozyarts.org, and also spacesgallery.org. And you get more information probably from that over here. So the first part of the evening is educational in nature, and George Carr is with Gallery Sharp. He's also a very fine jazz trombonist, jazz educator, jazz historian, and jazz pontificator. He's going to give a brief presentation surrounding ideas of copyright, IP, and sort of related to the music business and music production. And George, do you want to make one?
Sure, I don't care.
Okay. So I'll hand it over to George and actually have handouts that I'll bring along while he's talking, some flowcharts to sort of illustrate some of the points he's making. I'll turn
just
over.
To confuse you.
Yeah, they're really confusing. So I'll pass it on to George, and we'll do a presentation. Following that, we'll keep going with the networking and the food and drink, and they're bringing out more food the whole while here, so feel free to drink and eat.
Great.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to see you all. Thanks for coming out. My name is George Carr. I'm a lawyer with Gallagher Sharp. I do a chunk of my work is related to consulting, especially in arts and arts licensing. I do copyright registration and trademark registration work, and so I am a fairly good fit for your topic of trying to understand, I think the sort of philosophical question is how to monetize your art, and I sort of picked the music industry actually at the request of one of my fellow VLA members, but I think most of the principles I'm going to talk about will apply to any kind of art. So I'm just going to cover briefly what I think are the three main topics in that, which is creating the art and registering it as a piece of fixed creative property, then licensing or selling it or merchandising it in some way to sort of monetize it, and then finally enforcing or administering that. So I'll try to spend a few minutes on each of those, and then I'll leave plenty of time for Q&A. You can either raise your hands while I'm talking, please feel free, or come up afterwards and I can give your questions to the crowd, or after I put the microphone down and we all go back to eating, please feel free to come up and talk to me, and I'll bend your ear by yourself if that's the way you prefer to talk. Let me first talk about the creation and registration of works. And like I say, I'm generally going to focus on music because that's the one I'm most familiar with, but most of this will apply to any kind of art. The critical stage, obviously, is the creation of the artwork itself. People sit at home next in front of their piano and make art. People work with a mixing board or with a beat machine or with a microphone and a little pocket mini recorder to make art. That's all the creative process. Under American copyright law, you don't have to do anything particularly creative, frankly, to be copyrightable. You can arrange existing works in a new way and copyright that little piece of creativity. So there are a lot of different ways in which you can be creative, and even the slightest little scintilla or modicum or, you know, pick your vocabulary word for the smallest amount you can think of, any bit of creativity makes your work copyrightable. What's challenging about that and what often happens when you try to register that with the U.S. Copyright Office in Washington, is that you have to clearly identify all the other people and works that affected and influenced your creativity. So that if you are making a mashup of two songs, or if you are making an arrangement of a pre-existing song, or if you are recoloring a poster based on a photograph that was already copyrighted, you have to know that, you have to disclose it, and you have to explain it to the Copyright Office. I have personally been involved in a number of cases in which copyrights have been invalidated because people, although there's no question they did something creative, they failed to disclose everything about their influences and the works that they used as input when they were registering with the Copyright Office. And that is a definite no-no. That will get the Copyright Office to invalidate your copyright after the fact. So my basic watchwords to you about being creative are, please do be creative. Create any number of kinds of art, any combination of artistic forms. It's a different piece of art when you put a soundtrack to a video clip or when you create a video clip using one technology versus another. But be aware that you have to somehow segregate your piece of creativity from all the other things that are going on in that artwork. If your piece of art, for instance, consists of 1 second sound clips from political speeches to which you then set a soundtrack, you need to be very clear and probably attach 2 or 3 pages to your copyright application explaining where all those little 1 second sound clips came from and why they're not original to you, or you run the risk of having the Copyright Office bounce your copyright or it being invalidated right when you try to enforce it later on. Sure, go ahead. Pardon me. Sorry. So the Copyright Office itself is a very administrative place. They will grant your copyright without much of a review. You do not have to like go in for an interview in Washington. It's just a matter of paperwork. You can download the forms from the Copyright Office website, send it in. Copyright, even at the very highest levels where people are making big bucks, Broadway songwriters or commercial filmmakers, they all do it the same way. Typically, the artist themselves declares the copyright, signs the copyright form as the artist, as the author, so to speak, under copyright law. In rare circumstances, you might be working as an artist for hire where you're already a staff person at a corporation or at a larger company. I'm not here to talk to those kind of people, so if you're one of those, please address your questions to me individually. But as a general matter, even you know Stephen Sondheim signs his own copyright forms and claims you know his own copyright in his own new creative works and songs. So the registration goes in, you send in a check, they give you back a registration certificate, and now you have a thing. It's a piece of paper that says, this is mine. Now what do you do with that? And that's the second phase, is how do you monetize that? And there's 2 general ways to go. The first is to sell it outright. You could create, usually, especially for younger artists, you have to bundle this stuff, make it into a portfolio. Say, here, I've got 22 copyrights for cartoons involving bananas. Or I've got 32 copyrights of standard jazz tunes that'll be great ballads for a new singer. Or I've got 12 different graphic designs for boat hulls. Or you know whatever it is that you're going to use to be creative. A lot of times they're bundled for sale. A lot of times they're sold individually. This is where you start to hear war stories about, I intercepted a limousine with Patti LuPone where she could, where I could pitch her this new song that would be great for her. Or I sent a pot of roses to such and such a song producer so that they would use my song for the next Radiohead album or something along those lines. And that's the part that's frankly the most difficult, is finding somebody who will trade your intangible property represented only by this piece of paper from Washington for money. And most of that is business advice. I'm not here to give you business advice, but as a general matter, that's the easiest legal transaction to go into, where you just outright sell your own copyright. Now there's one caveat that I'll warn you about in that process. It's very simple, and oftentimes it's good money because you're selling everything up front. You're trading away all your rights to future royalties or future payouts in exchange for cash on the barrelhead today. The one thing that I have seen happen that I really hate to see happen that I'll warn you against is that if you start selling off, transferring wholesale your own work, and then you continue to work in the same genre or with the same source materials, you may end up infringing your own copyrights. Because once you transfer that away from you, you know, you say, I wrote a song and it's a 32-bar song form and it's got the following chord changes and it has the following lyrics. If you start referring back to that or using a line from that song in your next song, the folks you sold that copyright to are now the sole owners of that copyright, and they have the right to say, wait, you can't make a new one that's too similar. You can't infringe. So please think carefully, and this goes back to the sort of registration hook. Only identify in that registration what's very most particularly creative about your work, and not the more generic elements that you're going to want to reuse. Don't claim a copyright in all seascape paintings that use the color blue. That's silly. Not only is it not going to be enforceable, but you're going to prevent yourself from ever making another seascape painting if you sell one of those copyrights. So please be careful about that. That's my biggest caveat for outright sales. Yes, sir?
Can you license copyright?
That's going to be my next point. Yes.
Sir. There was a case in point, John Fogerty.
Sure, Pink Floyd sold their own.
He was sued by his
own old record label.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or sounding like himself.
Right. So that's what I'm warning you against, that oftentimes it's good money, it's very tempting, especially for younger artists who could use the cash, but you do run the risk that if your song becomes a big hit and then you try to perform it, you end up paying yourself royalties or paying, you know, or getting threatened with your own infringement. So it does happen more often than you'd like to hear, and I urge you to be careful about that in your own affairs. Yes, ma'am?
I've got a number of songs that I copyright. This is when I just started, so I did a copyright of all of them, like as a collection.
Sure, as so, a whole book full, yeah.
Okay, so then if I want to sell one piece, do I have to re-copyright one of the pieces, or is that handled? Is one of the pieces of the collection handled?
The question was, and I think it's a good one, if you copyright your works as a group, in other words, you write a whole book of standard songs and send them to the Copyright Office as a book, you know, here's 15 tunes or here's 12 paintings or whatever it's going to be, how do you then monetize individuals out of there? And the answer is it's complicated, frankly. That's the kind of transaction where oftentimes lawyers have to get involved because you have to be very careful in describing the slice of that copyrighted work that's being licensed or sold, and oftentimes that affects the kinds of royalties you'll get because the royalties for compilation use are different from the royalties for straight up sale or straight song use, and so sometimes you've devalued your work by copywriting it as part of a compilation to begin with. So I can't tell you that you're screwed already. I can't tell you that you're, you know, I've already screwed it up, but I can tell you that it's complicated and you'd probably be well served by finding a happy lawyer to take to lunch or something and helping you decipher it on a more individual way.
Can you turn your copyright to each song?
Yes, you can copyright the works individually. You have to be careful, again, about multiple copyrights on the same thing. In other words, you don't want to copyright the whole songbook and then a year later file an individual registration for one work that's already copyrighted as part of the book. So be careful about that. My general advice, just on that point, is even though it seems like a great idea and it's probably cheaper to send in 20 things under one copyright fee, please don't do it because it causes a lot of problems later. It's much better. I know it sucks to write a check for $200 instead of 20, but it's much easier to both monetize your work and figure out what's going on legally if you do each work individually. And I know I hate to put upfront costs on artists because we're all trying to make do with what we can, but I really urge you that it's just not a good business decision to make those multiple registrations. So the simplest way, just to get back on the track, is to sell your copyrights outright. I think I talked a little bit about the risks of that. The second option is to license it, in which you will retain the copyright, or maybe you'll create a little one-man LLC or one-person corporation to hold your copyrights, and then you'll license those out to people. This is very common also, and it's very popular because you maybe get money long down the road. Artists don't often have a lot of retirement planning, and it's very attractive to think that you'd be pulling in quarterly royalty checks when you're 65 or 70 rather than having to work a day job at a corporation somewhere. So licensing is a very good option. The good news is that licensing has gotten a lot simpler. For musicians, the basic forms through ASCAP and BMI and other publishing and composing groups are very simple, very straightforward. You can often do them as simply as you can the copyright registration forms themselves. So I urge you to do that, and please do investigate those kinds of trade associations. The only risk, or the major risk with licensing, is that there aren't really any laws protecting you from undervaluing your work. So on the one hand, you may be a little hesitant to say that your work has great value. You're just a beginning artist, or you're a recently became a solo artist or something, and it's difficult to maybe demand the kind of money that you think you're entitled to. But I've got to tell you that an awful lot of people sign long-term licensing contracts for very small amounts of money, and even after the music turns out to be popular or well-written or critically acclaimed, they're still making pennies on what they could have made. So my general advice with licensing is, yes, please do it. Please monetize your work with, you know, a publisher's association or a record label or whatever you can do, but please sign a short contract. Please don't lock yourself in for 10 or 20 years because that's a bad idea. The music industry has changed a lot over the last 10 years and it's going to change a lot more over the next 10 years, just like every other artistic industry. And so short contracts make a lot of sense. Even if you get hammered and lose a lot of money on the first 2 years, then you can negotiate after you've made a big hit and potentially make a lot more money according to what you deserve. Yes, ma'am?
By short contracts, you mean contracts with a record company?
Well, there are a lot of contracts involved, and that's what I'm about to get into. There, the general system and music is only slightly more complicated than the rest, but I've given you a graph to explain just how complicated. The music industry actually involves four different sets of royalties, and those are only the most common sets of royalties. There's the publishing royalty for the person who actually wrote the sheet music, you know, and Stephen Sondheim sits down and writes a hit Broadway song. There's the mechanical royalty for every time somebody records a performance of that. And obviously there could be many, many recordings of the same tune. Imagine how many people have recorded Mustang Sally by now, or you know, any blues tune or any other kind of standard song. I think I read once that Stardust was the most recorded jazz song in history, like 18,000 different cover versions, and they're all being administered by ASCAP or something. So a lot of times the performance royalties, or what's called the mechanical royalties, are very different from the publishing royalties. The third royalty is live performance royalty. Everybody, at least everybody who tries to not get sued, pays for a royalty from somebody. Like I'm on the, or just got off the board of the Cleveland Jazz Orchestra. We pay an annual fee to BMI so that we can perform any and all songs in the BMI catalog. And we pay another fee to ASCAP to perform everything in their catalog because we put on live concerts all year and we need to make sure we don't get sued for it. And a sliver of a penny out of every time we pay that fee goes to each artist in BMI based on how what their market share is and what their history is with the various artists. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
The
publishing for the sheet music, the mechanical royalties for the sound recordings, the performance royalties for the live performances, and then what's called the synchronization royalties, which is for use of music in conjunction with something else, like if you wanted to underline a scene in a TV show, or you want to use it in a movie, or you want to use it in a commercial, or a 10-second advertisement for the Republican National Committee or something, all that stuff has to be licensed. And I use the Republican National Committee because in recent times, especially in this most recent political campaign cycle, they just claimed to have forgotten to pay those royalties and got sued by a lot of artists who aren't particularly Republican and decided they really didn't like the Republicans trying to use their music without paying for it. So I point that out just because even in those four kinds of royalties, there are numerous entities involved. There's an administrator for the publishing royalties. There's an administrator for the mechanical royalties. You know, all this stuff is tracked and administered and engineered by a number of different entities in the music industry, and they all, you know, pay a fee and take a fee and take a slice of the money flowing through their accounts in order to pay their own bills. And part of what you will have to do as an artist trying to monetize your project and monetize your art is figure out what makes the most sense for you in terms of keeping your costs down and not paying somebody 90 cents out of every dollar to administer your rights for you, even once you actually make some money from licensing. So licensing is generally covered by contract. You don't need a lawyer. You just scrutinize the terms of your contract, figure out whether the money makes sense, and then sign on the dotted line. And that's the most popular method. I think it probably beats out outright sale by a few percentage points. It's probably the most popular method of monetizing your art, certainly in the music industry. And then the final piece I wanted to talk about just in broad terms is about infringement and enforcement. I think I already mentioned that political campaigns get sued. Certainly live bars get sued if they hire a cover band who forgot to pay their ASCAP royalties to Led Zeppelin, or they decided not to pay their royalties to BMI when they started a Kiss cover band, or if they started to play John Coltrane tunes or whatever the type of music might be. The same thing happens here. I've handled cases here in Cleveland about, in fact, one comes to mind where a graphic artist who had made quite an impression and had several books published and a website up about his gothic art with lots of gargoyles and dragons and medieval imagery walked into a t-shirt store here in Lakewood, I think, and saw his own art on a t-shirt. And he thought, boy, that's odd. And sure enough, went out and hired a lawyer, filed a lawsuit, chased it down. Turns out that a graphic designer in Taiwan had pulled it off his website and represented it to be originally created to a company in the United States who then printed it on 40,000 t-shirts. And so the t-shirt company, you know, said, we bought it wholesale from a guy who claimed to have designed it from scratch. How can we be liable for infringement? The whole thing ended up literally as a federal case. You know, it's a federal crime to infringe on copyrights. And it's just one of many examples where infringement or enforcement of copyrights turn into a way bigger issue than you might expect them to be, either as a consumer of potentially copyrighted art or as an artist who's trying to protect your own rights. So my general advice on enforcement and infringement is in two parts. One is, please do not enforce your own copyrights. The legal fees will kill you, because guys like me have to charge by the hour and we cannot give away our services. So please, if you find out that you've been infringed somehow, depend on your administrators, whether you're a publisher that's given your license to ASCAP or whether you're a live performance artist who's given your performance rights to a manager or a management company. Please don't yourself go hunt down a lawyer and pay them a retainer and try to fight over it. It's rarely, rarely cost effective. And the second thing is, do keep an eye out for infringement, though. Part of the reason why you're making a living as an artist is because your art is valuable and because you need to preserve the exclusivity and the uniqueness of your type of art and your specific body of work. So once you get into a position where your art is monetizable, that you want to license it and you want people to recognize what's yours and add value to something because you created it, not because it looks like your art, you need to spend resources on protecting that, which means devoting at least some piece of your income stream toward a manager or some other kind of administration entity, you know, whether it's ASCAP or a personal manager or whatever, who will take that off your back. Because trust me, artists make bad copyright lawyers. You're much better at being artists and making art and practicing your violin or working on your watercolor technique than you are at trying to figure out the law of copyright. Leave that to a manager or a business person or a lawyer and focus your energy on making new art and making art that will be even more valuable in the future after you can figure out what happened with this case that turned out to be infringement. So that's my basic advice, and I'm sure you can tell basic it is, because I'm trying to only talk for 15 minutes, and I don't want to overstay your welcome and be the guy between you and the food, which is rapidly arriving, I'm sure. But if you have questions yet for the group, please do ask me now, and then, like I say, I'll be around for the rest of the night. Yes, sir?
Real quick, as far as the administrators, ASCAP, BMI, how are they different?
ASCAP and BMI are different in many invisible ways. In all visible ways, they are identical. The basic deal works exactly the same, that you as a composer will give a license that ASCAP or BMI will administer for you. They will take some of your earnings as a percentage in order to cover their costs of litigation and enforcement and administration. They will send you quarterly royalty checks. I have never talked to an artist who believes that there's a serious functional difference between BMI and ASCAP. It mostly has to do with historical allegiances, that ASCAP was started by one particular group of composers and publishers, and BMI was started by a different one back at a time when the industry was very different.
So it's either or, you don't do both?
You cannot license to both at the same time. Both of them have an exclusive license agreement, which means you can only license a particular tune to that entity. There are certainly plenty of composers, especially if they've worked for 30 or 40 years, who have gone back and forth. So you may see, you know, I'm thinking of jazz examples like Chick Corea or Duke Ellington. Some of those tunes are BMI and some of them are ASCAP. But that basically has to do with which record label they were working with at the time and that sort of thing. So a lot of it is just administrative reasons. But functionally, they are very much the same. And I've never heard a musician who recommended one over the other. Yes, sir?
Law that's going into effect, that's been sort of petition, to basically penalize personal individuals who post up videos of possible copyright material. And I'd be curious to see what your take is, to see whether that's actually more fair use.
That was going to be my question. Let me sort of reiterate the question, which is there's now a movement. I'm not sure exactly where it stands in the regulatory regime, but something having to do with penalizing people who frequently upload pirated movies, music, whatever, digital media by cutting off their internet access or otherwise putting them on some sort of terrorist watch list of, or the sort to say that they really shouldn't be allowed to upload stuff to the internet. As a lawyer who comes from a constitutional background, I have a lot of First Amendment problems with that. I also, as a copyright lawyer, am well aware that a lot of use of copyrighted works is not infringing. People are allowed to parody your work. People are allowed to comment on your work. People are allowed to quote your work in small pieces and say, this is great art, or this is stupid art, or this is wonderful art, or this is art that made me want to go out and get out of bed in the morning. None of that stuff is infringing. And so the notion of this one simple black letter rule that will suddenly make all infringement clear and will make it obvious who's supposed to be punished and who's acting correctly, in my mind, is just impossible to administer and unenforceable. We're going to end up with a lot of litigation back and forth between people trying to upload home videos. I think you might have heard that the one that always catches my eye is a Viacom suit from a couple of years ago where somebody posted home video of their little three-year-old dancing and the music playing in the background was copyrighted. And so, of course, the record label, who's trying to, you know, enforce their copyright on pop songs, files an infringement lawsuit against YouTube or whoever the posting defendant was, and immediately got embroiled into a long, complicated factual dispute over whether or not the use of 29 seconds of a pop song is, in fact, infringement when it just happens to be playing during home video. That's not what legal dollars are best spent doing. You know, I'm sure Viacom or whoever that record label is regrets having brought that case. It cost them a lot of PR goodwill, and ultimately I don't think they won the case because they couldn't prove that it was intended to prevent people from buying whatever pop song was playing in the background there. It didn't actually cost anybody any sales. So my general impression is that it's a nice effort to say, oh yeah, we're going to be tough on pirates, but as a matter of practice, it's just not going to be much more enforceable than the current rules we have. Let me take one other.
I'll follow that up real quick with licensing. Is there any talk of actually licensing material on something like YouTube, which is a video reference, so that, and like BMI, ASCAP, or TSAC, so that artists will actually get royalties
No effort of any licensing, mostly because the folks who actually administer the license would then have to hire YouTube to work for them. You know, they would have to share their administrative burdens to say, okay, here are how many downloads XYZ excerpt has gotten, and this is the royalty due. And ultimately, that would have to be decided in conjunction with Google that owns YouTube that administers that. I don't see them giving up anything outside any piece that's already in their control. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if people use YouTube videos as part of art going forward in the future or whatever, but I'd be very surprised if there was ever a mechanism for them to pay royalties for that through YouTube. I'd be much more likely to believe that once you decide to make art involving a YouTube clip, you'd have to just find out who is the rights owner for that YouTube clip and pay them directly. Next question. Yes, sir. Difference between trademark and copyright. Trademark is used to identify goods as associated with a particular source. So when I buy Viva paper towels or I buy ping pong brand table tennis balls, I know that they're coming from a quality place. So trademark is intended to protect your brand identity as the manufacturer, creator, and seller of goods. The copyright is intended to protect the uniqueness of one particular work of art, a particular novel or a particular short story or a particular painting. So they're related. Sometimes people who own trademarks also write books or create copyrighted works and vice versa, but they're not at all similar in terms of their legal effect. Yes, ma'am?
I have a couple of questions, and they're totally diverse. One is a comment about the music licensing. I have a confession. I've infringed by posting YouTube.
Let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. How among us here have never infringed on a copyright?
What I've done is I've posted videos that have a popular song to them. And I immediately get an email back from YouTube that says, I mean, they detect it immediately. They know that that's a popular song that has a copyright. But the email says, you don't have to do anything about it. It just won't show up in Germany. For some reason, Germany has some kind of law that excludes it.
I'm mostly focused on American law today, but I will be the first to tell you that there are a lot of different copyright regimes in all kinds of industrialized countries.
But I guess the what I have heard is that a lot of music companies and musicians actually like for people to put their music to a private video because it encourages people to listen to that song.
Sure. There is, I think I just pressed a button here. There is kind of a tipping point. I've worked with many young musicians, and a lot of them would rather license their songs for no fee in order to get better exposure and in order to use them as a marketing pitch. I think that's a great idea, but I would never advise you to do it without their permission. In other words, you need to make clear with the artist that they are, if it's a live band, for instance, that they are taping friendly, you know, that they will allow people to tape their concerts, or if they are a recorded band, figure out the terms of their copyleft or other Creative Commons type licensing so that you're not facing a lawsuit if you use one of those.
My other question is, you said that if you're an individual artist, don't get into these negotiations on your own, but visual artists often don't have agents, and there's a lot of debate in the licensing as to whether you should hire an agent or not. So if you are an individual, you work with an attorney to get a license, and then there's some kind of infringement there, how do you deal with that if you don't have an agent?
I think in that respect, your business model is flawed. The question was, if you're a starting artist or if you're one who's trying to do as much of it as possible yourself, and you are negotiating the license yourself and spotting the infringement yourself and potentially hiring a lawyer to sue for the infringement yourself, I'd say that that's not sustainable. You can't possibly handle all those expenses yourself if that's just one piece of art that you're making. So I would suggest to you, and this is part of a sort of broader discussion, but I would suggest to you that for artists who make very unique pieces of art that take a lot of work, like something where you devote a year of your life and produce one thing, that you jealously and with great attention to all your resources make sure you have enough resources to protect it once it's done. Because I can imagine no more crushing discovery than to find your own work pirated or put on YouTube or whatever the medium is, and have no way to even hire a lawyer to sue on it. Or if you create a lot of art and some of it gets infringed, call it the cost of doing business and say, I'm not going to sue for every infringement because I'm just going to focus my energy on being an artist and making more art. Certainly, plenty of jazz musicians have, you know, rather than hire lawyers and spend 90% of their income on legal fees, just ignore it and move on. So I'm not advising that that's always a good business plan, but I've got to tell you, it's part of the calculation in terms of cost-benefit, and that's one of the reasons why I advise that you think hard about your business model, about do I have enough staff in place to do what needs to be done and to administer these rights? Can I depend on my record label to do this? Can I depend on my agent or my distribution company to handle this piece of the potential puzzle? Anything? I'll get to you in 1 second. Yes, ma'am.
I just have one question. When I'm working with artists, I always push them towards ASCAP more than BMI.
Okay.
Just because I feel like they, for me, I feel like they've got more services available mm-hmm. to their members. So I just wanted to get, from your standpoint, what if maybe you thought that there was a draw that BMI had that ASCAP did not?
I said already, I'm not aware of any functional difference for the artists that I've dealt with. I'm sure that the people I've dealt with in my practice as an infringement litigator and as a copyright lawyer mostly have to do with the rights infringement protections, and I gotta believe that's pretty consistent between both entities.
Right.
But I'm just not aware, if you are, about any differences in other services, you know, different disbursement patterns for royalty checks or different other business practices that might make one better or a better fit than another for any particular artist.
Not so much like business practices, but like services that they provide, like the options to buying that health insurance.
All could be true, but I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I'll use it as a springboard, though, to pitch for COSY, which is another good opportunity to make sure that you have at least access to those various business services that you might not be expert at yourself. Part of what COSI offers is referrals to lawyers, referrals to accountants, referrals to business planners, referrals to, you know, all kinds of professionals who, rather than you having to be a solo person that's, you know, reinventing the wheel in your basement out of frustration, please get somebody else to handle that.
Two more questions.
Yes, ma'am.
One of our local CDCs puts out an annual call for artists. If I may read the two sentences that are in the agreement, you can comment. By signing this agreement, you understand that you are assigning the entire right, title, and interest in your design to the CDC forever and in perpetuity. Then it goes on to say, neither the artist nor sponsor can use the design for commercial purposes until the entire project is completed according to the CDC's timeline. And one more sentence. But I think those two are contradictory. What does that mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems like those are two that are either out of context because of stuff elsewhere in the agreement or are contradictory with each other. The one seems to be a pretty basic total assignment. You know, I give away all my copyrights for now and forevermore. And the other seems to indicate that at some point in the future, they will release it back to you. But without any more information, I can't tell you what might be intended. And to be honest, a lot of copyright agreements, even when they're drafted by lawyers, you know, I mean, believe it or not, there are lawyers who don't know that much about copyright, and there are plenty of people who are not lawyers who know a lot more about copyright than many practicing lawyers. So I'm not here to defend every contract that's been written, or certainly not one like that, that is potentially internally contradictory. All you can do is try to negotiate it or try to straighten it out before you sign it.
What would be the legality of the artist crossing out what they don't want in an agreement like this and initialing it?
So long as that is still accepted and countersigned by the other person, that is effective. You are allowed in Ohio to interlineate, that's what it's called, interlineate into contracts, make changes, rewrite portions, and as long as both parties or every party in a multi-party contract agrees to that and initials it, it is legally effective. That officially amends the contract as to everybody involved. So feel free, and that's part of my advice when I do some of my volunteer work for artists through the VLA. Please do negotiate those points. Please do cross out things that make you nervous. Please do try to renegotiate points that you feel are just plain unfair. With that, I'm going to finish my official presentation. Thank you so much for all your questions. Thank you so much for coming. And once again, I will stick around for the rest of the evening, so if you have additional points you want to raise with me individually, I'm happy to help. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, George. George's firm is Gallagher Sharp. You can be, is it just gallaghersharp.com?
It is.
Okay, you can be reached there. And also he's representing volunteer work for the arts this evening.